Hey everybody, welcome back to Check the Gate in AFI Deep Dive. I'm Bert, and as always, I'm joined here with Brandon.
Hello.
And Michael.
Hello.
And today we are doing, in our little grab bag, a movie that I chose, Who Framed Roger Rabbit, which is a 1988 film about when a cartoon rabbit is accused of murder, he enlists the help of a burnt-out private investigator to prove his innocence. This film always been a classic to me. I feel like one of the reasons why I chose it, I feel like with this grab bag, I was like, I want to do at least one that I feel like you could at least make somewhat of an excuse for it to be on the list. And mainly it was because, like, when we were, it's Robert Zemeckis' film, who obviously we talked about last week with Back to the Future. But then also, a few years ago, when we did Forrest Gump, that's his movie that is on the list. And doing research, documentaries, all this stuff, you're seeing all this stuff about how they're praising, how they're just able to seamlessly insert Forrest in all these different, you know, points in history, shaking hands with John F. Kennedy, you know, being there for all this stuff. And the whole time in the back of my head's like, well, he did this 10 years ago.
Yes, this has already been done.
Yeah, so we're giving him props for something we already know he can do. And then, honestly, just rewatching this movie, the few times I've watched it this past month, I'm just like gobsmacked every time I watch you. Just how incredibly seamless all this stuff is.
Seamless, yeah. It's just, and it was what,
1988? 1988, yeah. And that I was watching a kind of a cool documentary. It's called Behind the Ears, where you just like are seeing all the stuff without the animation there, and it's so cool just watching it. And like,
yeah,
I had read, and then they even talk about it in that documentary, that they had Bob Hoskins, who plays Eddie Valiant, the main character, they had him go to like mime school to learn how to, one, be able to focus on something that isn't in front of him, but also just mime him being able to lift Roger, throw him, carry him, and like give off the illusion that he has like at least a little bit of weight on him. And then you see the dailies of him doing it by himself, and there's just absolutely nothing there.
Yeah, one of the
but everything just looks up like
one of the biggest scenes of that is like at the end when he's making the weasels laugh, you know, laugh themselves to death. And he's like juggling things and like running into things. Like, you could tell that's totally just mimed, and it's great. Like, it's fantastic.
Yeah. But they also had like these super like intricate like robotic beams and poles that were like a remote control, but it's, and the robot is moving fluid, and then all they had to do was just animate the weasels or baby Herman or Roger just directly over it, so they didn't even have to work, because this is all like hand drawn cell animation. This isn't even computer digital effects yet. This is a I'm trying to, the exact number was, it was 326 animators that worked full time. They created 82,080 frames of animation and over 1 million drawings just for the film.
Like a Disney crew.
The OG essentially, Disney, I mean, crew. It is a Disney movie, so it's Touchstone, which is the adult version of Disney. But I had read that every frame...
I was going to say, it's an adult Disney movie.
Yeah. I'll talk about that in a second. It was Disney was kind of going through some stuff. Their movies weren't hitting, so they started that Touchstone to try to focus on maybe possibly doing adult... Not adult content, but more mature content. And then just after...
Reach a wider audience. Yeah,
and then just after this, the Disney Renaissance hit, and then they kind of abandoned that. Not altogether, but then, like, right after this, you have Beauty and the Beast, you have your Aladdin's, you know, that kind of brought them back. The animator stuff is every frame of the movie featured a mixture of animation and live action had to be printed as a still photograph. An animator would then have to draw the particular illustration for that frame on tracing paper set on top of the photo. The outline drawing then had to be hand-colored. Once that was done, the drawing had to be composited back into the original frame using an optical printer. So they're working like four times as hard just for like one frame.
Yeah, wasn't the opening scene, didn't that take like 6 months to do?
I didn't see that, but I would believe it because it's all, again, it's all hand-drawn. You know, the fast-flicking frame stuff.
Yeah, it's all...
But even that, and then just how they seamlessly cut from that hand-drawn animation to opening the fridge, and then it's the... now you're in the real world and stuff, and just like... That was always mind-blowing to me. I remember being introduced to this movie. I found out my dad has never seen it. It's so smooth. Yeah, very. I mean, especially like I had heard that the head animator had said that there was like rules in place, like because this isn't the first time they've done animation and live action cross, not to this effect. Fantasmic had some of it. That dancing Donald Duck with Gene Kelly had it, but the filming has always been very stagnant and staying still, so they wanted to move the camera with the characters as much as possible to give it that extra life touch, so it didn't look like you were just watching somebody talk to, you know what I'm saying, like the camera itself is almost another character because it's keeping everything and whether yeah. you notice it or not, it's like that much more visually pleasing to your eyes,
right? It's keeping everything in the same dimension.
Yeah. Zemeckis was talking to him. I forget the guy's name, but he was like, could we do that? And he goes, yeah, of course we could do it. And he's like, well, people have never done it before. He's like, yeah, because they're lazy. He's like, so it's going to be like a lot of work? He's like, yeah, it'll be like 3 times the amount of work, but we can do it. It's just going to it's gonna be hard. But like you were saying, even with that opening scene, when we cut where like Baby Herman is like leaving the set, and like they're showing you right away how they're part of that world, like, you know, when he's like walking under the skirt and he blows the skirt up, Roger's yeah. pulling on the director's coat, it's just a visual feast for your eyes. That's one of the reasons why I'm just like, man, if we had this on that list. Obviously Forrest Gump is a great movie, no one's arguing that, but
yeah, I read that they said Roger Rabbit had to be like touching a solid object like throughout the whole movie, or like a real object, like you said, the coat, or mm-hmm. you know, every time he sat down on a chair, dust had to come up, you know, just to give it that extra little tie-in to the real world.
Yeah,
it's pretty cool.
They filmed like a 30-second thing as like a proof of concept for Disney. Of like, it wasn't Bob Hoskins, but it was an actor playing the Eddie character going downstairs. And they're like, well, and Roger, he's a bit more crazy and clunky, so we're going to have him go down the stairs, he's going to trip, he's going to hit boxes. And you know, you have the animation of Roger going down the stairs, and he hits the boxes, and the boxes go toppling over. He's talking to Eddie as they're walking, they're doing like a walk and talk. And to him, he picks him up, and he sets him on the trash can, and the trash can lid just kind of jostles just a little bit. Just as like a proof of concept, and that's when Disney was like, okay, we can actually do this. And then obviously Steven Spielberg had to write a bunch of IOUs, had to cash in a bunch of IOUs, because that's a whole other aspect of this movie, is that, you know, Mickey Mouse and Donald Duck interacting yeah. with Daffy Duck and, you know, Bugs and Tinkerbell. And those rights were so meticulous that you have to show our characters exactly the same amount of time as you show a Disney character. They have to have the exact same amount of lines, words, syllables, like down to that. So like when you get that awesome dueling piano scene with Daffy and Donald, Daffy on screen first, it means Donald is going to be the last on screen. Daffy's saying all this stuff, Donald's going to retort just as many times. We're going to get the exact same, you know, Daffy one-ups Donald this way, well, Donald's going to one-up Daffy this way. Like, everything had to be exactly the same. It's like a, like how everybody's contract in Fast and the Furious now is we can't lose a fight, so the best we can do is tie. If Vin Diesel and Dwayne Johnson ever get in a fight, the best outcome is there's a tie. That's pretty much what this was.
Yeah. Yeah.
What's wild about that is like, well, what's wild about that is like, that's like the kind of stuff you would fight for. Obviously, you know, it's intellectual property, but like the stuff you would fight for, like if you were someone's agent, be like, yo, so and so needs to be this way, blah blah blah. It's just
yeah, like in a divorce court, yeah. Like split 50-50.
Yeah, it's like they need to have X amount of times, you know, appearing in this many shots and blah blah blah. But it's just like their intellectual property versus a person. But
Well, and I had read that since this movie takes place in the 40s, you know, they wanted to use the 1940s drawings of Bugs Bunny and Daffy Duck. But Warner Brothers had toys, and they wanted the characters to look like the toys they... Because, obviously, if you put two pictures of...
They got
to
make money, too. Yeah,
they look similar enough, like, you're going to know that's Bugs Bunny. But, obviously, they look just enough different that maybe you can't expect that. So, that's why you get that old classic look of Bugs Bunny, and then the Daffy Duck with his... the hair's all crazy. You know, the... But I guess they duped them. They sent in, you know, photos for Warner Brothers to approve, and then they just went with the 1940s look anyway. But which, by the, with all the legal litigation stuff like that that was going on, it seems wild that they would then just pull one over anyway. But like we were saying, this is a 1988 film. The top three films of 1988 are number three, Coming to America; number two, Who Framed Roger Rabbit; and number one, Rain Man. A ticket cost in 1988, $4.11, which is $10.88 our money. The budget for this film was $50.6 million, which is equivalent to $133.9 million. But the box office was $329.8 million, which is equivalent to $873.3 million our money.
Damn.
Was nominated for 6 Academy Awards, and it won 3. It lost Best Sound, Best Art/Set Decoration, and Cinematography. It won for probably what you would expect: visual effects, film editing, and sound editing. But it was also awarded a Special Achievement Award for animation, direction, and creation of the cartoon characters. So, but then also received that honorary Oscar for blowing people's fucking minds. And another aspect, by the way, of this film, which we haven't even touched on, this is also like a great noir film.
Oh, totally.
Yeah.
Another genre of film that is all over the AFI list. It's obviously a comedy, but even with the comedy, it still works great as that, you know, it's not in black and white, but it's still got that great noir feel. You know, Eddie Valiant is the, you know, the gumshoe detective, you know, all of your...
Yeah, there's...
Yeah.
There's smoking, there's light... Didn't mean to talk over you there.
Oh, no, you're fine. Yeah, I mean, like, down to the... And you even have the classic 1920s weasels, gangsters, that just, you know, are the cherry on top of that. They're, like, in their own little movie, though, but it's... Yeah. They're still like great little henchmen. You have that the villain that is clearly the villain, but you're not supposed to think is the villain, but he's obviously the villain because his name is Doom. When we meet Eddie, you know, he's on the set after that great opening of the transition from the cartoon Looney Tunes a la Tom and Jerry cartoon, where Roger's just absolutely decimated by anything and everything in that kitchen. We find out that Eddie is an alcoholic PI who's being brought in. He's being paid $100, which is equivalent to $1,405 our money, to follow Roger's wife and take photos of her because Rick Maroon wants to blackmail the rival cartoon studio, Marvin Acme. And pretty much that first 15 minutes, obviously we talked about the cartoon aspect in the front, and then walking around the studio grounds where he's pretty much just getting home, but it's Zemeckis just showing you what he can do. The live-action bicycle being ridden by the cartoon pelican, you know, that I had read that the bicycle was supposed to keep going, but it kept falling over because they're literally just pushing the bike out and it was going by itself. But because it kept falling over around the same area, they just... animated that the pelican just was a clumsy clums, because that's just all the cartoons are. I mean, it's obviously they're made for comedy, so everything is comedy. So all the cartoons are silly and clumsy, but again, they're literally just showing you all the cool stuff we can do. Eddie borrows his camera from Dolores, who he's clearly had a romantic relationship. She informs us, you know, we find out that the red train line that's being bought by this crazy Cloverleaf company, they're laying off all the workers. Eddie's got a bad attitude, and she lets us know that he hates Toons because a Toon killed his brother. It's just they're constantly showing us all the cool stuff we can do. That octopus bartender, it's all live action bottles and glasses and stuff. That's all stuff done puppeteering above. The shaker that's shaken, the glasses that are getting poured bottles of liquor into, and then they just animated the octopus to make it look fluid, which is also crazy. Like they showed in that documentary I was talking about, you can see before they animate the octopus, and it's just people acting, grabbing glasses, and there's just stuff bouncing around them, but it doesn't look silly. It just looks like it's floating, like an invisible man.
Yeah, it was really cool how they did that.
I love the joke of scotch on the rocks, and I mean ice. Because he goes back and put a bunch of rocks in his drink. He meets Acme because he squirts that invisible ink on him. And then a sad, sad Betty Boop, who just like once they went to talkies, a bunch of actors went out of business because they had terrible voices. Now Betty Boop isn't an actress anymore because she's in black and white. But I still got it, Eddie. Everyone is a rabbit's coming out to dance, and he's expecting like a rabbit, obviously, come out, and it's, you know, super hot, sexy Jessica Rabbit. Everybody is enamored by it. It kind of reminded me of like Cameron Diaz in The Mask, that scene, or instead of Jim Carrey going, with you know, the eyeballs. Like it was pretty much that.
Ooga.
But again, we're getting, the tongue. That's essentially how everybody's acting. But it's reversed now because now she's the cartoon and the audience is all real life stuff instead of it being a Jim Carrey cartoon character. Great stuff where she's manipulating, you know, she's pulling out hankies and rubbing them on top of Acme's head and grabs Eddie's tie, pulls it back. Again, like I said, the first 30 minutes, all we're doing is just showing off how cool showing this technology off, is that we're... Yeah. After the show, Eddie sneaks around and catches Jessica and Acme at Chex Notes playing patty cake.
Chex Notes.
it's obvious the noir femme fatale, you know, we're playing it up super sexual, and then we find out that patty cake isn't a euphemism. They were actually just playing patty cake. patty cake, patty cake, patty cake. you know, we're back in Maroon's office, and Roger's there crying. He's looking at the pictures, and they do like the little the flip thing to make it look like, you know, it's them playing patty cake. I was there, kid. I took the photos. They were playing patty cake. watching this as a kid, and now it's just like you don't even think about it, but now it's obviously, you know, they're playing on the trope of the cheating wife. It's obviously played for laughs because it's silly that they're playing patty cake, but like obviously in this world that is like one of the worst things you can do outside of maybe murdering somebody, which is another thing that is about to happen. But we get that great scene of them giving Roger a shot of liquor to calm his nerves, and he like blows a gasket and goes ballistic, snaps to it and says that he's gonna make this all better. Jessica and I are gonna get back together, and he like does that perfect run through the wall cartoon with the cutout of the window. We go back to Eddie's apartment / office, and kind of like what we talked about with the Back to the Future, Zemeckis is just showing us folks kind of like filling in those gaps with us not having to say anything. We know his brother's dead. We see him affected by it because we have the other side of the desk is completely covered in dust and cobwebs and pretty much left intact from where his brother left it. We get the photos of them used to being a silly, goofy couple. You know, he's developing those photos of them at the beach. We get newspaper clippings of how they found the kidnappers who kidnapped Huey, Dewey, and Louie, and how their uncle is forever grateful. for their work. You know, they got the clown noses in the police photo, the new clowns on the Toonbeat, you know, just letting us know that, you know, this is the reason why he is the way he is. He's the grizzled PI now, hates Toons, hates most people, pretty much lives bottle to bottle. He wakes up the next morning.
I've seen some stuff.
Yeah, a Toon dropped a piano on his brother's head.
That's... Yeah.
Oh, geez.
And as if by coincidence, we find out that Acme has not only been murdered, but someone dropped a safe on his head. And they say that Roger Rabbit is obviously the number one suspect. Great scene of just like, honestly, it's like a lot of background gags, you know, boxes saying like overused gags, you know, and it's like boxes full of bowling balls and dynamite. So it's like another fun little nod of just like stuff you see in every cartoon. The overused gags are all in boxes labeled as such.
Yeah, that's why you like have to watch this movie a couple times, is because you just miss so much stuff in the background, you know.
Yeah. And obviously, you know, you get the inside jokes, but then you get like other, they're like referencing other movies too. Like when they're at the bar and the guy says the invisible rabbit Harvey is next to him, that's like a whole other reference too that I didn't even get until, you know, like the last few times I watched it. I was like, oh, this whole time he's referencing that Jimmy Stewart movie where he's seeing an invisible rabbit. You know, we got paint on rope that, you know, they're saying it's the paint from Roger's gloves on there. We see Jessica Rabbit's being, what we could believe is being interviewed by the cops upstairs in the office. Eddie's walking through as they're pulling Acme's body out. They trip over a box of shoes, annoying, loud, honking shoes. They're just running all over the place, causing a muck. He sees Acme drop that buzzer. He goes to pick it up, and that's when we meet our nefarious Judge Doom, who is clearly the villain of the movie, but sometimes I wonder if they're playing it as a twist on purpose, because it's clearly him the whole time. I think the twist is more that we find out that he's actually a Toon, but like then you watch it and you're like, oh, his makeup is so bad in this movie. It's clearly like, it's not bad as in like it's a knock against the film, but once you know that he's wearing like a mask and a rubber suit, you're like, oh, that makes sense, that's why he looks the way he is, you know.
And the eyeballs, he doesn't blink the entire movie.
The whole, yeah, he doesn't blink. And he's got like those plastic looking teeth.
Yeah.
He lets us know that his weasels are on, that, you know, we come in, like I mentioned before, they're like the 1920s. Ah, wise guy. We got him coming, a bus. The weasels in like the gangster outfits, Tommy guns, smoking cigarettes. That if they have this terrible knack of laughing so hard that they die if they laugh too hard.
Kill themselves.
What did they tell you? You're gonna laugh too much, you're gonna die. This movie scarred a bunch of children, I imagine, because to prove how scary he is, he picks up like a cute, adorable little honking shoe and then dips it in what he calls dips a dip. Which I it says on the side of the barrel, it's turpentine, acetone, and benzenine, which is paint thinner, essentially. So, yeah. Meh. So, it's just like a...
Yeah, it's like the same paint thinner that they used on their drawings for the artwork.
Yeah, to get
of the
cells, to, like, to erase the cells. Yeah.
Yeah.
So, like, a fun little... Even if you don't know the inside joke of what it is, like, you still understand that this kills cartoons. It just looks like acid. But then when you... you know, read between the lines and see what it is, you're like, oh, that's actually like super clever. Eddie goes back to his house, and that's where he runs into Baby Herman, who's just a nasty little shit. This is one of like the coolest parts of that documentary, is they have like this tiny little robot in that crib, and it's just like a pole with wire sticking out and then an arm. And that's when I was talking about the guy in the suit with the arm. As he's moving, it moves with it, because that's a real-life cigar that the robot is holding. And then they just draw over Baby Herman. And it was one of the coolest things, too. Like, if you watch that whole scene with just the robot, it's, like, moving super fast and fluid. In my brain, 1988, probably 87 when they're filming, that technology is, like, you know, crude and bad. And then you watch it, you're like, oh, man. It's just, I implore you to, like, look for that footage, because it's just really cool to watch how they do that. You know, they use the same thing for later on when Roger's smashing plates over his head. It's the same, but it's a bigger version of that, that it's picking up plates and hitting and breaking.
I love that scene.
Informs Eddie that this is all one big setup, because Acme had a will. All the Toons knew that he had a will, and the will was going to leave Toontown to the Toons, but now nobody can find the will. So the plot thickens. If Jacob was here, he would yell out his favorite line in the movie as he pushes baby Herman down the stairs and he drops his cigar. He yells,
"My stogie!"
he enters his house, and that's when he finds out that Roger's been hiding out. How did you find me? He's like, oh, I couldn't find you, but then I asked the grocer. He didn't know where he was, so I went to the newspaper man. He couldn't tell me where he was. I went to the liquor store, and he weirdly knew exactly where he lived. So turns out everybody in town knows that Roger's hiding at his place. He pleads that he's innocent, and he begs him to hide him because the weasels are coming, and then right on cue, the weasels show up. He goes and he hides him. He got him in the bath water while the weasels are, you know, obviously threatening him. He gets him to leave, and that's when, you know, that's when we get that great scene of, like, the soap goes in one of the weasels' mouth, and he starts laughing, and they all start laughing, cackling, and he's like, if you keep laughing like that, you're gonna laugh yourselves to death. Luckily, we can't find him, so they leave, but we're gonna take him across the street to Dolores' bar. And that's when, we do that because Roger handcuffs himself to Eddie, which is also, like, a handcuff that they have him handcuffed, but it's like another animatronic handcuff that moves a specific way, and then they just animate it around his wrist. It's another really cool thing that they're doing. They're using practical effects for this kind of stuff.
Yeah. Yeah, and it's just little details like that that make it so just seamless.
That's what I'm saying, that it's lively. You know, that you breathe that fake with the real, and it just looks, and I would say the only thing that really sticks out in my brain as, like, maybe this hasn't technology-wise aged the best is really just when Eddie is in Toontown surrounded by green screen, you know?
Yeah.
Because he looks very superimposed fake in there. But when you have the little effects of the animated interacting with the live action, it looks seamless. It's just when we put him in that, it almost looks darkened. Yeah.
Fake. Yeah, that fake background.
That's probably the one thing, watching it on, you know, this rewatch, that's probably the one thing I would say that maybe aged the worst.
You might have said this in the beginning. What's the ratio of, like, between, like, total animation time versus, like, total just, like, live shooting time? Like, do you know how long the animation took?
I think it took 8 months to do everything. So, I don't know. But also, Bob Hoskins said that they didn't have an image of Jessica Rabbit yet. So when he's at the dance club, they told him, you know, just imagine your ideal sexual fantasy. That's why he's reacting that way. And I thought it was funny after he said, when he saw the movie, he was like, what I pictured in my head was not as risque as what I just saw. So I don't have an official answer as far as how long, you know, the post took.
I can go look it up too, but I thought I missed it. But
yeah,
it's just with what you were talking about, like, you know, the process about the actual animation, it seems like shooting the live footage would just be, like, you know, easy. And then, you know, doing all the overlays would take some time.
They had said that they were, they almost filmed everything, like, 2 to 3 times. Obviously, you have takes and stuff, but you're rehearsing like crazy because they had dummies as, like, stand-ins so you can get, like, the height correct. So they would rehearse with the dummies so Hoskins would know where the eyeline was. And when he would pick him up, you know, they would have to measure his eyeline correctly, and he had to do like muscle memory. That's where the mime schooling came in also, is there, the muscle memory of when he's picking up nothing. He needs to know where, how far his arm needs to go. He's holding the ears, so his hand needs to be over his head a bit, but it needs to be so that it's looking like he's looking into Roger's eyes. So yeah, it came down to a lot of muscle memory, but they were also doing a lot with stand-in dummies. And then the voice of Roger, Charles Fleischer, was on set, like, doing his lines, you know, all that fun stuff. But he also came to set dressed up in, like, Roger Rabbit costume. Like an Easter Bunny get-up with the ears and everything, the overalls, the gloves, to the point where I guess one day they broke for lunch. And Charles Fleischer was there in his full outfit. Like, he didn't have anything on his face, but it was just the ears, the costume, whatever. And people in the studio were like, Jesus, get a load of this rabbit movie they're making. The effects look terrible.
The budget is what for this movie?
50 million? 50
million?
A king's ransom?
I just mean, like, on the outside looking in, like, oh my god, how much do they pay that guy?
He did almost all the voices for the weasels too, and then other background characters also. We're at the trolley bar. We get that great scene where we're hiding in the back. We're handcuffed. Dolores gives him the saw. He's trying to get out. You know, Roger takes his hand out of the handcuff to hold the box, and he's like, "Does this help?" And he goes, "Yeah, thanks." realizing that he's like, "You could have gotten out of this any time." He's like, "No, only when it was funny." a great scene with Judge Doom showing up. Writes on the board that there's a $500 reward for this rabbit, which is $7,027. For
some cash
for a rabbit dip. Luckily, solidarity. None of the guys at the trolley bar are willing to give up Roger, even though the place is a mess. We got broken down merry-go-round on the. on the player. It's quite a silly song for all you drunken reprobates. But no matter, no tune can withstand the shave and a haircut bit. I love, again, not a lot is said about Christopher Lloyd. Like, how, obviously, we just saw him be crazy in Back to the Future. And in this, he's menacing, but it's, like, still very soft. So, like, a professional actor is supposed to, like, go and knock on a wall and do shave and a haircut. But even that, you're just like, and then you see how it's affecting Roger, because it's all for laughs. He's made for comedy. And this hurts me to not do the joke to the point where it ends up screwing them over, because he bursts through the wall. Two bits! we're about to dip him. But Eddie's got an idea. Hey, Judge, shouldn't the rabbit get a last request? A final drink? And nothing in this movie makes me feel like Doom would actually be like, yeah, sure, I'll acquiesce that request. He seems like a guy who's like, no, I'm just going to dunk him. But he allows it to happen, gives him the drink, and then what happens is what we know is going to happen. Roger goes ballistic, starts breaking things again. Eddie takes that time to dispatch of the weasels, knocking him out of the way, and he knocks the dip over. To which is, you know, you see everyone's freaking out, because obviously there's this acidy dip on the ground, but none of the humans should be affected by it, so I don't know why they're backing up. But we escape.
Just paint there.
Yeah, I bet the plate is just eating through that hardwood. They escape, they get in the van. That's when they find out that they have Benny the Cab. A character we don't know, that they're just like, oh, it's Benny the Cab. Let's just escape in Benny the Cab. And then we get a classic, Chick's Notes, cartoon chase through the streets of through the streets of L.A. Great stuff, more comedy, crashing into stuff. We got the weasels in a live-action car, cartoons in a live-action car chasing a live-action person in an animated car. We evade capture, but we're hiding out in a theater, you know, and nobody takes a hit like Goofy. you know, Eddie opens up to him about his brother and that he was... I love these, just like, no, why don't you like tunes? He goes, my brother was killed by a tune. He goes, a tune? Oh, no. It's supposed to be real sad, but it's still that silly voice. No wonder you hate me. Lets him know that, you know, him and his brother used to love Toontown. Cut it up all the time. But then one day a tune with bright red eyes and a high squeaky voice dropped a fucking piano on his head. That's the reason why he's the way he is. I promise I'll never yank you by your ears and get anymore. Even my ears. Yeah, sorry about the ears. While the film is playing, we see there's a, because, you know, 1940s, we got to do a cartoon and then we do a newsreel. And the newsreel's filling in the blanks for us that RK Maroon has made a massive land deal with Cloverleaf, who we know is the company that's buying up all the trolleys. So he connects the dots that RK Maroon is actually involved in this. So they head back to the studio to confront RK Maroon. They have Roger wait in the car. And as he leaves, we see that Jessica Rabbit comes out of nowhere and knocks him out and throws him in the back of a trunk.
Got him.
Maroon, believing that Eddie's going to kill him, starts spilling the beans about the blackmail because he wanted to get his business. There was a deal that, with Acme out of the picture, Maroon would get the business side of things, but Cloverleaf would get all the land. And before he can tell him who the big boss is, an eerie gun a la noir film peeks out around the corner, shoots him in the back, and he's unable to tell him what's going on. Eddie goes down and sees that it's Jessica getting in the car and fleeing. So he starts chasing her. They get all the way to that Griffith Tunnel, iconic tunnel, which was, you know, was also a big staple in Back to the Future 2. I love the scene of him just like, you know, I'm not quite the I'm getting out of retirement, but he comes out and, you know, he pours the booze on the ground, throws his live action gun away. It's like, it's time to get silly. You know, he pulls out the gun that's like from Yosemite Sam. It's, you know, it says like the, it says, thanks for breaking me out of the hooskow. You know,
the bullets, the
animated
are awesome.
Gun with the, yeah, the cowboy bullets.
Yeah.
You boys ready for one last ride? Well, look who it is. If it ain't Eddie Valiant. I love it. You know, he throws it. When I watched this as a kid, I wonder, I was like, so when he fires the bullets, are they just gone? It's like he shoots the one, you know, it comes out, you know, hits the bottle with the tomahawk. And then later when he shoots the threes, he went that way. I was like, so does he just not
he
have
just doesn't
those
get
cartoon
back.
Bullets anymore?
Yeah. He yeah. used them up. What a waste.
I know. That's the dumb stuff that goes through my mind when I'm watching these kind of things. It's like, well, now he just, what? I guess fire all of them or else that one bullet's just going to be all bored in that case by himself. Lord knows he'll never open it again. We get that great... as we're entering into Toontown, the curtains, all the different curtains pulling away, you know, a la Michael Jordan entering from Space Jam. The singing sun, the trees letting him know we're in La La Land, Toontown crashes, and that's when it's just amok, amok, amok. You know, Tweety Bird tries to kill him, Droopy Dog tries to kill him, Mickey Mouse and Bugs Bunny try to kill him. His brother was killed by a cartoon, and they're just like, we don't care. You're in our territory.
Suck it up.
He finally finds the real Jessica, who he confronts. I know you killed him. She's like, no, I actually hurt Roger to protect him, because if I didn't do it, somebody was going to do something much worse to him. You know, we see she pulls out a gun. Eddie thinks he's going to shoot her. She's going to shoot him. She shoots past him, hits somebody. And we find out it's Judge Doom. Who would have thought? We get that great shot of him running away with his arms flailing in the air. They get in Benny the Cab and chase him down, but that's when the ground has been covered in dip. So Benny's now out of commission. They capture him and they take him back to the... all back to the studio again. Roger tries to come in and save him to no avail, gets captured, and that's pretty much when Doom spills his guts about everything that's about to happen. I'm running Cloverleaf. I'm buying all this stuff. I'm in a level Toontown. I'm going to dip it to death. I bought the rail car
freeway,
so I can put them out of the business. It will be called a freeway. Miles and miles of road.
Billboards.
Little gas stations and shops and billboards cover the side. It's like, why would anyone drive a freeway when they could take the express train for a nickel?
And get on and get off and get on and get off.
What's like the worst thing about LA is the traffic. Which, by the way, this really did happen. Not necessarily an evil cartoon takeover, but like the tire companies bought the trolley cars, like the companies, and put them out of business so people would use their cars and, you know, buy more tires and stuff like that. I had actually read that, so Chinatown, a movie we did on the list, it was going to have two sequels. One of them was filmed, The Two Jakes. You know, the first movie was about water. I believe the second movie is about power, electricity. And the third one was going to be about the real life story of how the rail trolley cars got put out of business. So this is like a soft remake of that script, in a way. It's the
which is loosely based off of a true event.
Yeah.
Who knew?
Capitalism.
Eddie decides he's going to distract the weasels by making them laugh themselves to death. Puts on a great vaudeville show of him and stuff, singing and rhyming. And they slowly, one by one, start laughing hard as he's taking these pitfalls. Nobody takes a hit like Goofy, but Eddie Valiant is right up there with them.
Just the part where their souls leave their bodies always like made me laugh. Like I loved watching this scene like as a kid, and it just still is as funny today.
My favorite one is the guy in the weasel in the straight jacket, as he's dying, hits it so it goes back to the dip that spring will go back to start pointing and saying bye bye, just making
bye bye.
Time to kill the rabbit. He kicks the main weasel square in the nuts, sends him into that dip vat. Somehow, you know, obviously they get in the fight with Judge Doom, and it obviously it's a cartoon and it's made up and it doesn't matter. But like out of nowhere, Judge Doom is on like a steamroller, comes out of nowhere, tries to run over Eddie, but he uses that hole in the box to like escape.
Yeah, classic.
And then somehow Doom is off the steamroller, and now the steamroller is going the opposite direction. Not that it matters, but it's just like, well, how did that? It just turned around.
It just turned around. Came out the hole on the other side, and it just flipped.
Yeah, we got that silly gorilla glue.
Acme glue, super glue.
Yeah, Doom punches, his hand goes through, and he gets stuck to the steamroller. And then a moment out of fucking Austin Powers, he just slowly just gets munched, crunched. Which obviously I could see is probably being terrifying for kids too, because he's like, did you sleep with your kids, Brandon? I feel like you said
the first like 20 minutes of it, but then yeah, they just didn't really, they didn't care. I think they're a little too young.
Yeah, I don't remember when I saw.
Did I remember watching this? I remember watching this when I was younger, and I wanted to see all the different Acme products. And I was like, man, they got a freaking
right,
spread, don't
yeah.
they?
Yeah, the best stuff.
Frank Sinatra sword, that's the swooning sword.
The singing sword.
Yeah.
Doom's munched and crunched. Oh my god, he's dead finally, but then he starts picking up. Oh my god, he's a toon. Not just any toon. He goes and he sucks on the helium, and then the eyes pop out. Remember me, Eddie? When I killed your brother?
That part's creepy.
Eddie, just like this. Voice gets all high. His eyes start bulging out of his head. So now we're battling through that again. He's got the... Now we're going full toon mode. Christopher Lloyd's got springs on his shoes, and he's bounding up and down, going all over the place. He's got a giant golden mallet for a hand that turns into that buzzsaw. But Eddie finds that mallet that has the shooting boxing glove that you think he's going to hit him into the vat, but he eludes it, but it ends up hitting the nozzle that ends up spraying Doom anyway. And then we get the, we're clearly making fun of Wizard of Oz. I'm melting, oh, what a whirl. Great scene. He just leaves a mess, and he's like that yellow paint around him. We spray the water on the ground. Toontown is saved. We found the will. It was in that love letter that Roger was writing to Jessica, but it was written in invisible ink. The toons have been saved. They do really just wrap this sucker up, like, in the last... Like, all right, Doom's dead.
It's the last 20 minutes of the movie, because I rewatched the last 20 minutes. And they wrap it up.
Like, literally the police show up. He's like, Doom killed Acme and Maroon and my brother. Check the paint. It'll match what's on the ropes. There's paint on my shirt. Oh, that's because of invisible ink. Oh, read that letter. Because he even says, he's like, I wrote her a letter on a plain blank piece of paper. We see the will pop up. Toontown now belongs to the toon. Smile, darn you, smile. You know, and it ends with Eddie laying a big old fat sloppy kiss on Roger. And then Porky Pig, that's all, folks. But we have to have Tinkerbell in there, too, because we can't have a Warner Brother ending this movie. Tinkerbell hits us out, and that's it.
She wrote.
Do you think this is a thriller?
Yes.
No, comedy.
Oh, I should have looked. I didn't even look if it was on the AFI comedy list or not. I know it's not in the top 10 for crime or gangster or animated. I had read that Tim Curry was the first choice for Judge Doom, but his audition, they said, was too scary.
Yeah, I bet.
I could totally see Tim Curry
just absolutely
destroying it. And they're like, whoa, dude, that's too good for us. We can't afford you.
Then they offered it to Christopher Lee, but Christopher Lee turned it down because he thought it was stupid.
So many people turned down roles in this movie, like when you read about it. Yeah. Like, and then they're all like...
Harrison Ford was the first choice of Eddie Valiant, who didn't want to do it. Like, I think they were trying to play off that Blade Runner.
Eddie Murphy, you know, like, turned it down because he didn't understand the relationship between the toons and the real life. And then he's like, oh, I missed out on that one.
They wanted Bill Murray, but he's infamously very hard to get a hold of because he doesn't have a phone, he doesn't have an agent.
They just sent him by carrier pigeon.
Well, he has like a phone number, like a home phone number, and you're supposed to leave a message. But I guess they said that they reached out, but they never heard anything back. And Bill Murray said he was in a public restaurant, he was reading the paper, and he read that, and he audibly yelled to the top of his lungs because he would have taken that role in a heartbeat.
Oh, man.
Chevy Chase was offered, but he didn't do it. Honestly, I think you need like that, not necessarily has to be Bob Hoskins, even though I think he's fantastic. I think you need like somebody not known for comedy. So like I could see a Harrison Ford working, because you need to have that straight opposite of the wacky zany. Because I feel like Bill Murray or Chevy Chase would just be hamming it up with them. Especially Chevy Chase.
Well, it looks like it looks like Who Framed Roger Rabbit is not on the comedy list for AFI.
And then to tie it back to the AFI list that we did, the look of Jessica Rabbit, the image of her, like the silhouette, was based on Lauren Bacall, who was married to Humphrey Bogart, but her face and the hairstyle was Veronica Lake, who we discussed in Sullivan's Travels, the movie that we all really didn't like. But if you just look at the poster of Sullivan's Travels, it's her face with that outline, and you can see Jessica Rabbit all over that. But I absolutely love and adore this movie.
Yeah, really good.
Like I said, the reason why I picked it, and I even mentioned it when we talked about Forrest Gump, it's because of, I feel like one movie gets more flowers because it was an Oscar darling. I mean, this movie won Oscars, but obviously Forrest Gump won Best Picture, Best Director, Best Actor. You know, it ran the gamut. Right? I feel like people need to put some respect on, you know, its name. I think people might shut it off because it's a cartoon, ergo it's a kids movie. which sure it could be. It's a little bit more adult humor, like, for a kids movie.
But. You know, a little cheesy comedy or slapstick comedy. You know, but it doesn't diminish the artwork and the skill it took to make this movie.
No, I guess what I'm trying to say is I'm trying to get the word out.
Go watch it.
So I'm gonna bang on my name. Yeah, I mean, A plus for me. You know, I give it, you know, 5 out of 5 goofy gymnastic movies. But you all right there, bud?
Sorry, I raised my hand.
He's trying to give it thumbs up.
I chose the wrong button. Sorry. Here you go. Thumbs up.
Okay. Oh, there it is.
I didn't mean to raise my hand. I don't have a question.
No, you're okay. Yeah, I mean, do we have anything else we want to talk about? Discuss about it? Any final thoughts?
It was great. Me smacking my face on the ground gave me the opportunity to watch it 3 times. Because I watched it the first time. And then I watched it 2 times this week.
I watched it 3 times, too. A little peek behind the curtain for those listening. We were supposed to record. It was like 1.5, 2 months ago.
Yeah. It was about a month. Yeah, anyways.
And the day before... I should say...
Merely hours before.
8 hours before, Michael had to go to the hospital because he did his best Doc Brown impersonation and banged his head on a counter. I guess just the floor. He hit his head on a counter.
A dog sabotaged me. Where's
the flux capacitor? Did you come up with something like that?
No.
And with anything, all I got was a $250 nice. Hospital bill.
Oh, classic. Damn. You are. And then with various vacations, because we're not holding ourselves to, you know, this doesn't have to. We're doing this as for fun. It just happened that we weren't able to record it again for another 2 months. So I had watched it twice before because I hadn't seen it in forever, and I wanted to, you know, watch it fresh. And then, not necessarily the Unforgiven clause, but I was like, I'll watch it twice. And then we weren't able to do it. And then I watched it this morning, actually.
Dang.
Yeah, because I already had my notes written because I did it the second we were going to record the 8 hours. But I was like, well, I need to watch it again just so I can, like, follow along with my notes to see where my brain was at when I wrote these. Because sometimes, you know what I'm saying? It's like you write something and then you watch it again and then you have different things you want to discuss. You're like, oh, I need to squiggle this in real quick, you know, that kind of stuff. So yeah, I watched it 3 times, but I ain't complaining.
Yeah.
It's a good one. I'm glad it was that, and it delight. Wasn't like, you know, a terrible movie Sullivan's that we had to watch. Travels. That I...
Yeah.
At least with Sullivan's sure. Travels, only an hour and a half.
I really wish, though, that the sequel to Who Framed Roger Rabbit would have happened. I still think the prequel. The
Toon Platoon?
We still need to tap J.J. Abrams to make it, like...
Well, did you see why Spielberg didn't want to do it?
Yeah, because he made Schindler's List, and he's like, I can't make fun of it.
He didn't want to make a comedy World War II movie after making like a super sad Holocaust movie. Michael, the idea
plot,
for the prequel
though, is, I mean, the plot is amazing.
Since Toons can't die because Dip doesn't exist, they're getting drafted for World War II. Because obviously we're still in this, you know. Imaginary world, so like
we're in the
40s. Toons are, you know, overseas fighting Germans, and I would assume there would probably be some caricature cartoon Nazis there too. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
And so Spielberg was like, I don't know. I just kind of poured my heart and soul into Schindler's List, and he was like the main producer. Obviously, he wasn't directing, but J.J. Abrams was working on it for a while. But yeah, it never happened. I think the premise could be funny, but I can also see why Spielberg was just like, maybe not.
Instead, they made Inglourious Basterds.
Mm-hmm. Well,
loosely based off of Roger
Toon
Rabbit.
Platoon?
Toon Platoon.
Is that true? Are you yanking my chain right now? Okay.
No, it's not true at all.
I was like, because that would be insane.
It is kind of wild to think about. Like, you got a whole... Wild Bunch and
Roger Rabbit is the Brad Pitt character.
Yeah.
My name is Lieutenant Aldo Rain.
What we have here is a Mexican standoff.
Porky Pig's he's obviously
that's all, folks.
While he's like scalping Nazis and stuff, just now I want to watch it.
J.J. Abrams, I was looking up, if you're listening.
Yeah, J.J. Abrams, if you're listening. I was looking up.
We know he is.
Yeah, he's a monthly. He's a subscriber.
He's on the Patreon.
Yeah. But anyways, I didn't even know that Roger Rabbit 2 even existed, and then I was like, oh, look at that shit. Okay.
It's also based on a book who censored Roger Rabbit that I guess was a bit more adult. It's very loosely based. I had the documentary, they were like, we saw the book and the rights had been bought, and it was just like, we like this idea, but we want to, like, it was also, I guess, like a very meta book. It was comic strip characters, because that's what it was. I'd grown up my entire life, not my entire life, but like a good amount of my life, thinking that Roger Rabbit was like actual IP. Because they've made shorts.
Mm-hmm.
I would go to my family premiere video, and in the kids section, you could rent a VHS that had like 4 Roger Rabbit, Baby Herman shorts on it. Yep. So and then obviously Disneyland has its own ride, you know, the Roger Rabbit ride in Toontown. They have their own Toontown. That's now, I guess, called like Mickey's Toontown, but at first it was just Toontown from this movie. So I went around thinking this entire time that it was like actual IP, and then finding out that it wasn't. I forgot where I was going with that. What was I talking about before? I just completely had a mind melt. Anyway, it doesn't matter. It's not important.
I was along for the ride, and I was just like, whoa, where are we going?
Yeah, I distracted myself with Disneyland stuff. You've ridden the ride, right? You guys done the ride?
Yep.
Yeah. It's like the longest line at Disneyland for some reason.
For some reason, exactly. It's like, what? This was not as thrilling as the other rides.
But you get to make the car go crazy. Because it's like Roger Rabbit's cartoon spin. Something like that. I got like a photo album full of like half of just pictures of me in Toontown, wanting to take my picture everywhere. In the jail cell. Trying to lift the heavy, you know, dumbbells.
Mom, take my picture. Mom, over here.
Nobody takes a headlight goofy. You used to Goofy's house used to be a bounce house.
Yeah.
Then a bunch of kids got hurt. God. Anyway. Should we talk about what we're doing next week before I start rambling again?
Let's do it.
Let's do it.
All right. Well, next week, it's a Jacob's pick. So hopefully Jacob will be on with us. That'd be great. Jacob, we miss you. We love you. We want you. We are doing Dead Presidents, a film I've only seen once, a film that is advertised as a thrilling heist movie, and it's actually barely a heist movie.
But so it's a thriller?
I don't know. The reason why I didn't care for it the first time is because, again, it was advertised as a heist movie, and then it's only like the last 10 minutes, and I was just like, where the fuck's the heist at?
What are they taking?
But I am excited to rewatch it and watch it the way I'm supposed to, which is, you know, as like a, you know, post-Vietnam life back home movie, which is how I wish it would have been advertised to me. So we will be back next time. Where have you been to?
Duped.
I thought you said I've been to. Anyway. We'll be back next time with Dead Presidents. What do you say we go ahead and cut, print, check the gate?
See you guys.
Bye-bye.